Welcome to Elevate Your Event, your favorite podcast for transforming fundraising events. Join us weekly for expert tips and creative ideas to make your next event a standout success.
In this episode of Elevate Your Event, we join Jeff Porter, our CEO and founder of Hanbid, as he joins a panel with NX Unite discussing fundraising in the digital age, tools, and trends for success.
Everyone, and welcome to our panel. My name is Melody Grasha, NXT Unite team member at Nexus Marketing and your moderator for today's panel. Today's panel topic is fundraising in the digital age, tools and trends for success. I'd like to first introduce Bob Duckworth, who is a fundraising solutions consultant at NPACT, an organization that offers a full suite of services that support nonprofit operations. Bob has 25 plus years of experience in the nonprofit sector, helping fundraising professionals with their fundraising solutions. Bob, thanks for joining us. Also with us is Cyrus Kazi, who is the CEO and co-founder of Quantibly. He's a visionary leader at the intersection of technology and social impact and is known for pioneering initiatives that bridge diverse communities. With almost 25 years of experience in tech innovation, Kazi has championed projects fostering inclusivity and accessibility in digital spaces. Cyrus, thanks for being here. Also with us today is Jeff Porter, who is the CEO and founder at Hanbid. He's no stranger to fundraising events, having participated in them for over 25 years. He ran his first fundraiser in 2005 and has managed over 50 auction events and fundraisers for his own charities, not to mention hundreds more with Hanbid. Jeff, glad you could join.
Thanks, Malou. Happy to be here.
And finally with us is Karen Houghton, who is the CEO of Infinite Giving and a nonprofit investment advisor. She leverages her deep nonprofit expertise to bring modern cash management to nonprofit organizations all over the U.S. She advocates for organizational sustainability through better financial management, strategic access to curated investment practices, and increased stock, crypto, and DAF giving. Karen, thanks for joining.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
All right. Well, it's now finally time to hear from our panelists. And Jeff, I'll have you start us off with the first question. What fundraising trend do you think is most important for nonprofits to be on top of today?
Gosh, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of trends. You know, and I was thinking about this question. You know, I mean, trends are also kind of relative, you know, kind of what we see as new trends, just because we're kind of more on the forefront of technology, may not be the trends that some charities are thinking about, because we still honestly talk to people who are looking at using technology at their event for the first time, you know, even though it's 2024. So I would say kind of at one end of the spectrum, implementing more technology, more mobile technology, specifically at an event, is a trend that everybody should be on board with at this point, because it's going to give you a lot of information about what your guests and your bidders and your donors are doing. And that information is going to inform a lot of the things that, you know, I think Cyrus's company would do or anybody else, saying, you know, what kinds of activities, what types of items are they bidding on? What types of donations are they making? Did they attend the event? Did they not? So we're big on making sure that people are using technology at an event or even with any of their fundraisers so that they can capture that information. And I say beyond that, I think the trend that, you know, this would be kind of maybe a nice segue into some of the other hosts, data analytics and being able to use that data to inform how you interact with your donors and how you develop them, you know, from that first relationship you might have at an event.
Wonderful. Thanks for starting us off, Jeff. All right, Karen, what fundraising trend do you believe is crucial for nonprofits to prioritize today?
I believe a crucial trend and general kind of increase of awareness is in asking for all sorts of donations outside of just cash, right? So cash is king, right? We have to ask for that. But you have a whole suite and familiarity, which again, as you guys kind of said, it's nothing new. There's always stuckness, but the awareness and intention around asking for, you know, cryptocurrency, donor advised funds, and kind of billions of dollars sitting in DAFs when you have stocks. There's a new awareness of, oh, should I look into that? And I'm biased clearly, but I'm like, the answer is yes. And it's when you look at the average cash gift is $128. The average stock gift is $8,000. Average crypto gift is $10,000. Average donor advised fund grants, $12,000. So you have these big gifts. And so it's kind of that chicken or the egg problem that I hear a lot is it's like, oh, well, no one's ever asked to give us stocks. I'm like, okay, but have you made that possible? Or have you asked them for stock gifts? Are you aware of how beneficial that is for your donor? That if your donor is able to give you a stock gift, here's all the, you know, tax savings that they can have. They avoid paying capital gains taxes. You get a larger gift. They get a larger deduction. And so we're seeing a big increase in awareness of that. And then it's a loss to, well, what do I do? How do I get a brokerage account? Well, now opening a brokerage account is much more difficult, right? Banks are less willing to hold open brokerage accounts. So we found a great opportunity where we're like, hey, you know what? We can help nonprofits. We can open a brokerage account in 20 minutes. We can now offer a giving page that does the cash, stocks, crypto, DAFs, endowments, legacy giving all in one. So I think we're moving from an awareness of it to how do we do it to a very fragmented kind of opportunity of all these different folks to like, all right, there are these full stack opportunities of tapping into these larger asset gifts. And technology can make it a lot easier for them. I always say, I'm like, yes, it's a smaller group of people who will give you these types of gifts. But it is imperative to me when you look at fundraising trends is making it as easy for your donors to know what types of gifts they can give you and to remove as much friction as possible. Don't wait for a donor to come to you and say, can I please give you a stock gift? Make it easy, make it accessible, make it as frictionless as possible. And that's how you get those big gifts, right? You can make 62 donors can give you an average $128 cash gift. That's the same thing as one donor who's going to give you an $8,000 stock gift. So we want you to work smarter, right? You still have to build relationships with all of those donors, right? We know that. But if you opt out of those big high capacity kind of giving, those donors are going to go somewhere because they want those tax efficiency. So why shouldn't it be you? And I think when you look at 90% of nonprofits don't have a brokerage account and don't have the ability to receive stock gifts, there's a lot of opportunity and missed opportunity that nonprofits can pretty easily fix and make a part of their giving culture.
Thanks, Karen. All right, Cyrus, over to you. What trend do you think is important to prioritize?
Thank you, Malu. At the risk of sounding obvious, fundraising is both an art and a science. And the science part is that more and more tech-savvy, data-driven organizations are entering the social impact space. And on the other side, there's a whole new generation, younger generation, tech-savvy generation is also joining the donor community. So the trend, and it's becoming increasingly clear to us that a data-driven, tech-savvy, accountability setting is where the fundraising sector is going, at least on the science side. The art side of fundraising, as we have noticed through our working with our clients and nonprofits and NGOs, that now they have a much larger audience that they did not have access to before. They had, you know, difficulty reaching, I guess. So social media and social marketing, you know, if you're not familiar with social marketing, look it up. Fascinating stuff. This is how consumer behaviors are changed. So social media and social marketing are also becoming an increasing trend in how we engage with donors.
Thanks, Cyrus. All right, Bob, final thoughts on fundraising trends to be on top of today.
Ooh, The final thought is, I'm answering this question with a sad face. I attended a good conference in upstate New York in January. I was on the steering committee, so I knew what to expect. Yeah, I've been going to conferences for 25 years, fundraising conferences. We know those agendas and the tracks, demystifying planned giving, how to make the ask for a planned gift, how to run a successful event. And someone on the committee decided that the keynote speaker would speak on artificial intelligence. And it was a real surprise. And he got us scared. He said, here's all the changes that are going to happen in your sector in the upcoming years. And speaking to the audience for higher education, he talked about a large list of jobs that would be eliminated. One of them was paralegals, that we're not going to need paralegals anymore with artificial intelligence. my position and my colleague's position will probably be changed quite a bit over the next few years with artificial intelligence. The CRM that we support and consult with our customers, one of the typical questions would be, where's my lost donors? How do I create a list of alumni that made a gift last year that live in a yellow house and drive a blue car? With artificial intelligence, it's all going to go away. People are just going to speak to the computer. It's going to come up and give them the list. And they're not going to need Bob anymore. So that's why I'm sad.
Thanks, Bob. All right, we're off to a great start.
All right, so Bob, let's, if I may, because I agree, like, right, AI. We use AI, like, everything, like, so we understand, but I think there's some really neat opportunities. The optimist in me will not allow you to. Let's not end with that. Earlier, Bob, you were like, pull it out if I need to say more. I see a lot of positives with AI, and I know this isn't a panel about AI, but clearly I'm interested, and maybe folks listening are as well. What are some positives that you think will come out of leveraging AI and kind of where that will go? So we can end with at least a balanced view of that.
Well, thank you. I was thinking about the response to the last answer, and it ends on a positive note where fundraisers are going to be able to leverage AI and do a lot more easier things, a lot better.
Yeah. You got to trust the data, though, because we've used it here, and I'll tell you that you just have to really do make sure that the information that it is going out there and mining and taking is actually accurate, because it hasn't been that reliable.
And I think so much of it is learning, like, how to use the prompt systems, right? Like, if you're ChatGPT, we work with higher ed too, and I'm actually on a board for one, and we were talking about it, they're like, well, you know, the students even say when they leverage it a certain way, like, they're only getting XYZ responses. And I was just like, they're not writing the prompts properly. So you have to, like, I think that there's going to be a whole kind of industry for even nonprofits where it's like, for using AI, how are you, what are you feeding into it? And then ensuring its accuracy, as Jeff just said, too. It's a little job creation, too.
All right. Thanks for sharing, everyone. All right. Cyrus, I'll have you start us off with the next question. How can nonprofits leverage a combination of traditional and digital fundraising strategies to navigate the current landscape effectively?
Thank you for your question. So let's kind of tackle the traditional fundraising aspect of things. From a traditional fundraising standpoint, successful not-for-profits have already figured out how donors demand accountability and transparency. And I hear often in the grant making community that they have to rely on a friend of mine used this term. She said stale junk data. Reports coming back from their donors, grantees and what have you. So, one of the things that, in the traditional fundraising space that we are noticing is that they are demanding transparency, as I say, and making sure that the donor dollars are connected to the impact that is being reported, not just some fancy, nice little story going out, but actually say, this is the money that we received. This is how this is tied to this particular impact goal and so on and so forth. The other thing that, in the traditional fundraising kind of we're starting to see is that, donors are being asked what data they want to see and what is useful to them, not just some blanket statement, social media post or newsletter going to every single donor saying, hey, this is what we did. But they're asking to see, very specific types of information from their donor organization, so to speak. On the, non-traditional side, I want to say, I mentioned, kind of social marketing. Previously, I was talking to a couple of organizations. I've been talking to a couple of organizations, and our platform operates in like 80 plus countries. So they all operate within the nonprofits and NGOs. I'm noticing that they are using they're picking up the ideas and kind of innovative tools from how consumers, the B2C marketing happens, and they're targeting their prospective donors and current donors and based on specific issues. So if they're trying to launch a public health campaign or environmental conservation campaign or education, they're messaging they're setting up the message and the audience at such a granular level that it's a very sophisticated operation. But of course, not everyone has that ability. So these are some of the kind of like online, offline things that we are noticing among our clients.
Thanks, Cyrus. All right, Bob, what are your tips in leveraging both traditional and digital fundraising strategies?
Yeah, coincidentally, I like this question. Just coincidentally, I participated in my alma mater's Day of Giving. They moved it away from the Giving Tuesday in November. And so it was a tick up from last year, $1.1 million raised in one day. Most of it was online gifts. You know, think about the average gift size, you know, probably just a disposable income gift. But behind the scenes, the real success for that was two major gifts that made up 20% of that $1.1 million. So let me talk about that. So thinking about the new technology, which the word most of us use now is at scale, so a larger scale technology help reach a large number of alumni to get 3,000 donors to give on one day. So whatever platform is being used, that's the new technology. But we still need the traditional. In my view of the traditional is someone who's been a former major gift officer with a portfolio of 120 donors that are hopefully going to give six or seven figure gifts. There's still, we have to do the traditional activity, as Karen talked about. You know, you got cash is king. So we got to go out and visit those donors that are going to make cash or stock or pledge gifts. And we all know buildings were built, hospitals were built long before we had technology. So any of us could probably be an MGO and have our top 25 donors on a note card in our shirt pocket and pull them out and look at it. But what technology does for this traditional acquisition, cultivation, solicitation provides a dashboard for those donors. So we can quickly see that on our phone and see where they are in the pipeline. So that's what I see of the difference between the technology for at scale and helping the traditional major gift donors make better choices for asking for gifts.
Wonderful. Thanks, Bob. All right, Jeff, what would you like to add in terms of traditional and digital fundraising strategies?
Sure. I'll kind of go in a bit of a, like a, maybe a side direction and just specifically talk about events, since I think you guys will all cover some of the other traditional fundraising methods. So within events, I'd say on the traditional side, I mean, having in-person events, I think is still a great way to connect with donors, especially first-time connections with people that might be invited by somebody else. And being able to do that in a physical environment, I think helps. And then within the event itself, I mean, as much as we like to automate events and we provide technology that does it, there are some traditional things that are very impactful and work really well at events. One of them is obviously the presentation that you give. The other one would be like really kind of an in-room ask or paddle raise where people are actually physically raising a paddle, I think can be much more impactful than people trying to do it on their phone and showing a thermometer on the screen. As much as we, you know, we have some clients that do that and like it, maybe I'm just old fashioned. I still think it works better the old way. Live auctions as well. So having a live auctioneer that can start to really work the room and create some buzz and some little bit of competition in the room, I think also works really well and better than sometimes computers can do. But you got to marry that with the digital side, right? The stuff would be, you got to absolutely do mobile bidding at your event. You want people to stay connected to what they're doing. So even though they might be raising their hand to donate, you may want them bidding in your silent or live auction from their phone because they don't have to be physically in one spot to do that. So what does digital gives you? It gives you access to a broader audience. It also starts to eliminate a lot of the boundaries that physical events put on fundraising, like a time boundary, you know, or basically a location boundary. So you can have people who aren't there who participate or people that leave early who can still participate in your event. And then be even beyond, you know, the actual auction itself. I mean, just the ability to connect with people no matter where they are over a mobile device. You know, we talk about it being a trend, but it's also a tool that's here today, you know, whether it be, you know, text-based campaigns, giving one-click donations, any of the things that make it really easy for donors to be able to stay connected to you as a charity and be able to donate. They may be on an airplane in an airport. It doesn't make any difference, right? So those are the types of things that we see that I think give you kind of that best combination. So, and it's funny just to wrap up, like people do look at us funny when we say, yeah, you should do an in-person paddle raise or you should really host an in-person event versus a virtual event. because they definitely do still work really well.
Thanks for sharing, Jeff. All right, Karen, any additional insights regarding traditional and digital fundraising strategy?
Yeah, everyone spoke to it really well. It's ultimately combining them, right? Like, you're always going to have a donor that you need to go in person, buy them coffee, sit and talk, right? And it's, they're going to write a check. That exists. So you have to cater to that donor. And then when you look at technology, there's so many options out there. It can almost get overwhelming, and not all of them will make it better for you, right? So it's kind of sifting through, how do we leverage technology in the right way, in the right moment for our organization and our needs? We have seen with our clients a big shift towards in-person. I think COVID taught us all we don't have to, and that there's new and better ways that we can do things, like Jeff was saying, to even like increase our footprint. But the movement to also then be back in person. I have a technology company, and dang, I love raising my paddle in person, right? Like, there is that balance. So I would say I'm always about reducing friction for the donors. So even if you're doing an in-person, great, we're buying things, we're going to give, you're doing your big like give pledge. Like, if you are only giving me a piece of paper to put in an envelope, you're missing the boat, right? So it's have the paper, but also have a QR code. Right. So you can take a landing page, your donation page, right? So if, say, you're using our technology, we give you a URL, then that's customized to your event, to your organization. You create your designations, you do all of that. It's all there. You take the URL, you put it into a QR code. Then anyone can pick up their phone, they can scan that QR code. And then you can, in one place, they can give credit, debit, stocks, crypto, DAFs, like, via mobile. So you want to make it, now that's not for everybody, but when you look at all the data and where online giving and how people like to give, especially as you get younger generations moving into more and more philanthropic roles, you're seeing a movement towards mobile giving. So I think that's where you find that balance is which donors are you connecting with in person over coffee? That's still usually always a good thing. How can you leverage technology to remove friction and allow your donor to give easily in a way that meets their needs the best? And that's where technology can have a really nice play.
All right, here's our next question. And Bob, I'll have you start us off with this one. In what ways does data analytics play a role in modern fundraising practices? And how can we use these insights to inform fundraising strategies?
Yeah, and the customers I work with, it could be in alumni organizations, cultural organizations like museums, Cause and Cure. It seems to me that all the chief advancement officers are concerned daily on metrics such as, which donors am I losing? Who are my live ones? Who is not given the same as last year, or who's gone up? Because they're producing those reports for management and for on boards. It seems to be a continuous theme, and hopefully all CRMs can produce those reports easily, so the fundraising team can do what they need to do to raise money and not spend a lot of time in the fundraising database.
Thanks, Bob. All right, Cyrus, over to you. What role does data analytics play in modern fundraising?
Well, I mean, data is everything in fundraising, whether we like it or not. But it's been my experience that most organizations actually don't leverage that data accurately. I mean, you know, everyone has felt that pain every now and then working with profits, I'm sure. So for example, you know, donor retention data is great, but if you're a fundraiser, a savvy fundraiser, you should look at donor segmentation more than donor retention data. Yeah. Meaning what percentage, what's the demographic, how much, where, to what causes they're responding to. That segmentation is much more than, oh, we have retained 95% of our donors. That doesn't really tell you much, actually. So for informed decision-making, as Bob said, donor segmentation is very, very important. You can also use predictive modeling, but we work in predictive modeling and AI and all of that stuff. But, you can use predictive modeling for a likelihood of success and preferred amount and all of that stuff. But to be honest with you, most fundraising solutions that are offering predictive analytics at this time are in their infancy. There is not enough publicly available data to train those data models. And most of the time, the data scientists don't even know which data models to use to build these models. You know, I mean, is it dimensional? Is it cognitive and all of that stuff? So I'd be a little bit more cautious about predictive analytics in terms of fundraising. We're not there yet. It's getting there. Performance tracking, as I think both Karen and Bob mentioned, is a big thing. Over and over, one of the reasons I'm not, you know, trying to pitch my platform, one of the things that we have made easy in our platform across like multiple geographies, it's to make those KPIs real time and for every single audience, not just, you know, the fundraising director, but the board chair and the treasurer who still uses BlackBerry and those. So a wide range of audience, depending on their technical acumen, so to speak. And the last thing I want to say about data is that data tells a story. Just presenting the data itself is not going to back up your impact, your you know, what you're trying to convey to potential and current donors. So, you know, first write that success story and then substantiate that with data. Just don't say we fed 5,000 kids. That's an activity that doesn't really say anything to anyone. You know, so be prepared to show that data, back up your success stories with data. So that's how we have been kind of what we have been seeing within our beneficiaries.
Thanks, Iris. All right, Karen, what would you like to add to the role of data analytics?
Yeah, so well said. I mean, ultimately, a really good fundraiser is an impact-driven storyteller, right? Donors are just increasingly drawn to organizations that are effectively communicating their impact, and you have to do it in a compelling way that highlights tangible differences that those donations are making. And I think we know that, but then when you look at data analytics, you have to remember people are different, right? And so different ways of storytelling impact different people in different ways. So, you know, when Cyrus is talking about, you know, segmenting donor bases, like you can do that for targeted campaigns, right? So it's helping you kind of identify trends in the donor's behavior and then having segmentations to optimize like that storytelling, right? And ultimately, you're analyzing those donation patterns so that you're identifying which channel, which messaging resonates with which donors, and that can help you allocate your resources so that it's just intentionality, right? Instead of just that shotgun approach, like, what'd you say, like feeding the 500 kids? Like it's, no. We know this donor, we can make a segmentation that they are more passionate about this age of child or this impact or education versus food or, you know, and then you can start targeting really intentional impact storytelling that way. So I think don't look at it as the enemy. I know it can be overwhelming, but looking at it as in, oh, this can just help me further identify which messaging best resonates with which donor.
Thanks, Karen. All right, Jeff, what are your thoughts on data analytics in modern fundraising?
Yeah, a lot of good answers here. You know, the funny thing, when I read the question the first time, I'm thinking, in what ways does data analytics play a role, or what ways can data analytics play a role? Because I'll be very frank with you, a lot of our clients don't use enough data to drive their decision making. As much as we give them, you know, we'd love to see them use more of it. And I think part of it is it can be a little scary and intimidating. Like, how do I do this? And who do I rely on to help me figure it out? And part of it is maybe they've been burned in the past. I mean, maybe they relied on bad information or this really inaccurate stuff that made it difficult to drive good decisions. And I've seen it. Like, I mean, I've seen some of the tools out there where it's like, we're going to give you wealth information. We're going to give you demographic information. We're going to help you segment. We're going to show you the types of people that came to your event. And then I actually hosted a fundraiser and then we ran some of these analytics against it. And I got the report back. I'm like, that is not my audience. I know my audience. You know, they're not of this religious type, or they're not of this, you know, and you can start looking up people and seeing what the data is telling you they're worth, and you just know it's not true. So that makes it tough. I mean, I think to Cyrus's point, we're still in kind of our, maybe in some areas, some infancy, you know, in terms of where we're getting some of this information and what we're doing with it. So that would be one thing that I would just caution everybody is, if you're going to start using data, make sure that you understand the source and how accurate it is. You know, in terms of like what we tend to tell people to do, like you know, even artificial intelligence, I think down the road, if it's got a good data source, we'd be able to help you with this. It becomes kind of the best reporting interface ever, right? It could be, you know, what kinds of items should I be offering in my auction? What are my people, what are they after? Like, what are they like? What, you know, are they the types of people who want to go on trips or buy wine or whatever? Who should I be inviting to my event? You know, based not just on their wealth, because everybody just assumes wealthy people are generous, but we all know, I think generous people are generous. And, but maybe it's the type of people that care about your cause. So you should be inviting them, or maybe they did make a major donation, you know, to a charity that's similar to yours. You know, and then maybe where should I host my event? We have that conversation a lot with our clients. So you're having an in-person event. The place you picked, why did you pick it? Is you pick it because it's available? You know, or is it really convenient to the types of people you think would be coming to your event? So all those types of things, I think all down the road will get better. I think events will get more intelligent and you'll see it, you know, the reaction or the result of it will be better donor engagement.
Thanks, Jeff. All right. Karen, here's our next question. In terms of donor engagement in modern fundraising, what strategies can cultivate meaningful relationships in today's digital landscape?
I'm going to go through the lens of personal relationships, which I think we did a lot of research with high capacity donors. And the biggest mistake you can make is thinking of them as a donor and not a person. Right. And you got, they're both, right? But you have to also think of it through relationship. And one of the biggest like pieces of feedback that we heard a lot was that they don't want to really talk to me until they're ready to ask me for something. They're like, I would just love like that relationship building, the updates, the gratitude without the ask, which is hard because then you also hear, well, you have to make the ask and you have to be direct. And why go and just do that and then never make the ask? Someone's going to give it to you unless you ask. So it is a little bit of an impossible scenario sometimes with the feedback that we get. But I think approaching somebody as a donor and how you would like to be treated is kind of really basic 101. But I think sometimes we forget because it is strategies and analysis and like campaigns and segmentation, which is equally important. But I know, you know, my family is philanthropic. And when I get the personal, like, no, and not just the thing, you know, but like a personal relational commentary, super quick, light, but like of gratitude, I'm like, man, they do know me. Like they see this coming in and they appreciate it. So however you can do that now with, you know, the lower hanging fruit, the smaller donors, then it's, you know, social media is a great way to do that. Pictures, like making sure you have visuals that are easy to understand. I think there's a lot of technology and kind of strategies that you can go around that impact storytelling that are really important. Video is huge, but then also being able to segment that out, right? And then looking at those donors who it's like, hey, let's have a relationship with them. And yes, we have to make the strategic ask, but it's also to remember like them as a full person and that we can have both in place.
That's a great point. Thanks, Karen. All right, Jeff, what strategies for donor engagement do you recommend?
Yeah, I think specifically around using modern fundraising tools or techniques, I'll be honest with you. I mean, staying connected to donors to me is one of the best ways to do that. I mean, it's sad that a lot of organizations who do primarily event-based fundraising versus, you know, obviously what Bob's spend his career doing around major gifts and donor development. You do your event and then the event's over. You may or may not send a survey and then you don't talk to people for a year and then you do until they get the invite for next year's event. And we're not talking, we got to go beyond email, assuming that that's the way that we want to stay connected. Certainly you can. You can do newsletters. You can do all that kind of stuff. I've seen what's really been impactful is even just sending out it to a more intimate group, obviously. Send them a text message. Send them a quick update while you did. Yep, put a short video in there. It is amazing how impactful that can be. When I get a text message, even from, I'm on a board of a nonprofit, and when this individual sends out text messages with updates, it just gets me so energized, you know, especially when that text message is actually connected to a donation link. that you can quickly tap on and add a donation to. So I'm going to leave it there. I just think mobile technology, connecting with people wherever they are, is the best way to do it.
Thanks, Jeff. All right, Bob, what donor engagement strategies work well in today's landscape?
I think mine dovetails into my other panelists. I was very fortunate when I started my career 20 years ago. I had a great mentor, Tim. He was the sage of in our sector. He sat on the AFP International Board, chaired the Ethics Committee. And one time he took me aside and said, Bob, there's something you need to know, and that's institutions have no needs. It's the beneficiaries that have the needs. And that was a paradigm shift for me. And so that changes. Major gift officer going out and visiting with prospects. You go through the ice breaking part. What's the weather? How's things going? And finally, they ask about how's the institution doing? How is the college doing? Well, the college doesn't need any fundraising. It's the students who need the fundraising. And so translate that to the food bank. The food bank does not need any money. It's the people with food insecurities need the money. The hospice patient needs money. The hospice doesn't need money. And so I was able to tell the story that changed it for me. So that's not more of a one-on-one, but speaking to digitally, most nonprofits have Constant Contact or Monkey Platform. But also the fundraising platforms like the one I work on and others have those embedded. So just as Jeff was saying, either you can at scale text or email and talk about those beneficiaries, talk about the people who have food insecurities and show videos or interviews. I think that's the way to go.
Thanks, Bob. All right, Cyrus, we want to hear from you as well. What would you like to add to donor engagement strategies?
It's hard to kind of cover it. Some of my colleagues have already mentioned the key points. Donors are people too. And like most functioning adults, they also have shorter attention spans. So make your story short and sticky so that they remember. You don't necessarily need to send a half a dissertation like email every quarter, you know, describing everything that you have done. But so a constant engagement is a very important thing. Within this decade, fundraising is going to go completely digital. And you know, Jeff, Bob, Karen, they're, you know, expert in the industry. They know a lot of organizations are still not fundraising digitally. That is going to change by the end of this decade. So that means that a lot of not-for-profits have an opportunity to start building that online persona, if you will. From now on, they should be able to start curating those stories that is going to engage the current and future donors. One thing I often kind of tell our not-for-profits whenever they talk to us, I'm a recovering fundraiser, so I get to talk to not-for-profits all the time about fundraising strategies. And I tell them, and I've been saying the same thing, that every not-for-profit, every NGO should have a yearly target to engage the 16 to 25 demographic every year, because these are future donors. These are future followers. Engage them on TikTok, engage them on Snapchat, engage them however, you know, they want to. If they stay with you, these people are going to donate. One great example of that is the ethical fashion industry. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and a lot of not-for-profits have engaged young people through the social media channels, this demographic, 16 to 25, and saying, we are not going to go for the industrial, fashion industry, H&Ms and of the world, but instead we are going to do this very ethically, environmentally friendly, and so on and so forth. That has driven so many brand followers away from the established brands to this completely unknown brands. And I'm talking about billions of dollars they have raised throughout the entire world. Right. So the second strategy that I often tell our nonprofit NGO clients is that be prepared to be transparent and accountable. Those are not buzzwords. In a previous panel, I mentioned that the trust in not-for-profits are at all-time low post-pandemic. It's below 50%. And one of the reasons being that donors are not getting transparent and accountability from transparency and accountability from their organizations, meaning you don't necessarily always have to highlight the success stories. Be accountable and say, hey, these are areas of improvement and this is where we need help, right? Be transparent and be accountable. And one last thing, and this is a more of a recent discovery within our practice, is that try to make sure that you don't have a lot of organizations sometimes do virtue signaling, and we all know what virtue signaling is. But at the same time, a lot of organizations also miss the mark, and you have to understand that your current and future donors are noticing. They know where you stand. As Bob rightly mentioned, the fundraising is personal. If I'm an individual donor and I support an organization and I deeply care about a cause, and I see this organization is not taking any steps, saying anything anywhere, it will give me a pause. It will give me pause from supporting them. So, especially the younger generation of donors, I see they dislike apathy. They dislike neutrality. You don't necessarily jump into every political conversation, but you can, as an organization, take a stand on the social impact areas. So, yeah, those are my strategies.
Thanks, Cyrus. All right, Bob, I'll have you start us off the next question. How can nonprofits stay on top of innovative tools, techniques, and technologies that are shaping today's fundraising without getting overwhelmed?
Oh, I hope I like this answer. So I'm going to reveal to you a little bit of a personal Bob in the morning with his jammies on, drinking coffee. So just like probably everyone does, coffee in one hand, cell phone in the other, scrolling through your stuff, whatever your stuff is. And so I belong to a Facebook group that's a support platform for the support group for the platform that I consult for. And so I'm looking at all the posts from yesterday and I'm learning a lot. And so I'm hearing the trends and so that's what I do. But I would suppose for every other segment here's one for APRA, for the Prospect Researchers. Fundel has been around forever. So that's another support. So just permutate that from what I see on Facebook or Fundel or these others. I would imagine there's a lot of self-help from groups that are, it's digital that you read online. And so anyway, that's what Bob does in his jammies at 7:30 in the morning.
Thanks for sharing, Bob. All right, Karen, what are your tips in terms of staying on top of tech and tools without getting overwhelmed?
Yes, Bob, relatable. I was like, yeah, I do that. reading, I love using interns. Like, I would say get an intern and then have a project to be like, hey, go do a market research to be like, hey, what's the latest in, you know, CRMs? What's the latest in payments? What's the latest in auctions? And just being open. I think the biggest thing is we get overwhelmed and we're day-to-day survival scarcity mindset, right? That's human. That's okay. But you can't grow and you can't be innovative if you're stuck in that place. So if you don't have the place to and the bandwidth to be researching and kind of working on the business, on the nonprofit instead of in it, right? Then you need to be thinking about how could I leverage somebody else and have them do that? And then that way you're just reading their summary and they can do a little analysis of like, oh, I know you really like this, but here's some things. And just because you're aware of it doesn't mean you have to use it. But it's really good to be able to be like, okay, I'm seeing these trends and hey, we're not really ready to move right now, but this could be interesting for us to look at in the future. And I think that knowledge is power and ultimately can help you kind of leverage your organization into the future, right? If you're only thinking about today and how to solve that, which is important, but I think especially as leaders, we have to be thinking, what about 3 years, 5 years from now? And if you're not staying up to date, then you're already going to be behind. So I say give it to an intern and help them do it and or do the coffee and the reading. But the information's out there.
Great. Thanks, Karen. All right, Cyrus, how can we stay on top of the latest tech and tool?
I think at this point, everyone is nauseated from hearing the word AI. And you know, unfortunately, present company included, most people don't know what that AI means, actually. So I'm going to talk about something else because whenever we talk to organizations and they're asking us about our own AI, we're writing grants and complex federal government reports and all of that fancy stuff, I say, please take a step back because you need to be able to train that AI with the right data. If you don't have your data operations fixed, you're going to train a very, very sophisticated monkey that's going to generate absolute rubbish for you. And that is not going to be helpful. I'm being awfully blunt here. And that's exactly the phrase I used. you're going to get generic ChatGPT stuff that is not going to add value to your work. So focus to be on top of kind of innovative tools and everything. First, take a look at your own data operations, the workflow, who is using the data, who has access, what is being analyzed and reported, who was reporting them, who was interpreting them. Before you go into this full-blown, oh, we need a CRM, we need an ERP. Guess what? More than 60% of your organizations are not using the CRM or ERP on a daily basis. These are folks are usually who are decision makers. They're data consumers. They're not data, data generators, so to speak, right? So do you have the tools for the data consumers as well as the data makers within the organization so that they can bridge that gap? So looking at this operational things before you kind of jump into automation and AI, which are all great, and I'm not discouraging anyone from doing that. That's how you can kind of stay on top. And there's an abundance of information about what tools are relevant. One last thing I want to say is that before kind of adopting any new technology, experiment with small ones at a small scale, test it out, and encourage your staff to be innovative and then encourage them to take part in the process, not just the IT director suddenly turning all the switches on Monday morning, right? So make that a process that will help with your adaptation of innovation.
Thanks, Cyrus. All right, Jeff, what would you like to add here?
Well, I would say this is kind of why a lot of us are here, right? I would say work with somebody who's a qualified partner to help you with this. In combination with a willingness to take risks and try things, it's really hard to work with a partner who's going to advise you to do this or to do that, or maybe you'll implement this tool or maybe try this new technique and then just face the resistance of, I don't want to make any changes. So come up with a risk profile that works for you, work with a qualified partner. The intern idea is a good one. You know, I have a bunch of teenage daughters, and so they're definitely always keeping me abreast of whatever trends are out there. And it's always good to see how they interact with technology as well. But I would say that you got to marry up that with a little bit of like guidance and direction with, you know, and you can have somebody investigating the latest trends, but you then are going to have to map those against what's important to the organization. Because what's important to somebody in their 20s is not necessarily going to be important to an organization. You know, maybe they care about this feature, right? Or maybe they see something that's really kind of cool and hip, but you can't translate that into dollars or fundraising or guest experience or donors. And so we have that conversation a lot, you know, where it's like, you know, the board probably cares about how much money the event is going to raise or what kind of response they're going to get back from their guests and their donors. They're not necessarily going to care that the technology had some feature that a 22-year-old thought was cool. So you've got to make sure that there's a little bit of, I think, structure around that. But I do like the idea for sure. Like I said, you know, my kids teach me technology stuff all the time. So it's kind of fun to have them around.
Yeah, I agree, Jeff, too. That's a really great point. I was going for low-hanging fruit based on when Bob was like, hey, I'm reading. And I'm like, that is good. So like, how do you take it? You don't have that time to read, do that. And then sometimes that triggers like, oh, this is either you already are in the pain point and you just need a little bit of information around it. But I absolutely second that. I think we get a lot of clients that are coming through, consultants or folks who are like, yeah, I'm a trusted person and they need help in this area. And I'm exposing them to, you know, these different options where you talk to them, right? And so I think it's a way of just making it go quicker, right? Like, who's a trusted source? Where do they recommend? And then you can still make that decision.
Yeah. I mean, like we guide people all the time. They may not even be ideal clients, right? But part of the reason why we exist is to help people understand what are the trends they should care about and what does really apply to your organization.
Yeah, we do too. Sometimes organizations are like, I don't know, we're really small. And I'm like, our goal is to help you. Like, let's talk through it. Like, if you want this, like, we'll do consultations with anybody. And we're like, great, you're not there yet, but here's things to think about, or here's resources, or if you're DIYing it, here's the steps. Don't forget to do this. So I think that's one of my favorite things about this kind of industry with nonprofits is that there is such a tight community and a willingness to help. We're not in it for the money, right? We're in it for the mission and the purpose and the ripple effect it can have on society as a whole.
As much of a cause as a company.
Yep,
for sure.
Thanks, Jeff and Karen. I've had such a wonderful time hearing from our panelists today, and I'm hoping to get one final piece of insight from them all on the speed round. And Karen, I'll have you start us off with a question. Looking towards the future, what trends do you anticipate shaping the fundraising landscape, and how can nonprofits adapt their strategies to get ahead today?
Well, I'm not going to say AI because I know how Cyrus feels about that. I'm going to say recurring giving is standard, but so important, like just having that like passive incoming that can go. I also think endowments, we work with a lot of small organizations who I'm like, if you have reserves and you're getting out of a scarcity mindset, endowments are not what they were 20 years ago. It used to be a true restricted endowment, and now there's quasi unrestricted endowments that you can seed with, you know, excess reserve funds, and it gives you flexibility to potentially tap into it in the future. And ultimately that opens up legacy giving a little bit easier for small to mid-sized organizations. So I think that there's a lot of, you know, cryptocurrency, stocks, endowments, recurring giving that outside of just chasing the one-time gifts that can ultimately lead into larger gifts and ideally more sustainability.
Thanks, Karen. All right, Jeff, what trends do you anticipate will shape the fundraising landscape and how to stay ahead?
Well, I'm going to go way out there and I'm going to steal some of Karen's thunder, and I'm going to say blockchain, because obviously cryptocurrency runs on blockchain, but blockchain can be used for a lot of other things as well. And it's going to drive a lot of transparency into the nonprofit fundraising space. And so what can you do today? You can start preparing yourself for it. It's a ways out there, but I will say that if you need to improve the transparency of how you run your organization, not a bad time to start out.
Thanks, Jeff. All right, Bob, what is the future and how to get ahead today?
Oh, can I be brave enough to say AI? Doesn't it seem like not that long ago that we were still getting letters with wet signatures on them with the blue ink? You remember that generation that wanted to get that letter out of the mail and rub their thumb across it to see if it smudged, to see if it really was. So for 5 years of my career, I was in that position where I signed all the acknowledgement letters that came out of the printer for all of our donors. And sometimes my boss, the CEO, I'd for whatever level of $1,000 or better. And so that was the not too long ago where there was a mail merge that merged up to Word, and it was printed off the printer. For the past few years, the CRM that I work on, it's now if you have the email address, you can email them out as an email thank you letter or PDF attachment. Last Tuesday, I attended a product update, and the consultant showed us AI acknowledgement letters. And so you just build whatever the prompts are, as Karen said, and there's a slider on there from the left to the right. Is it going to be informal or something in the middle? Or formal, and AI generated it. And I don't know all the details about it, but I see that in the future.
Thanks, Bob. All right, Cyrus, what is the future and how to get ahead today?
I don't want to walk away from this panel thing where everyone's thinking that I'm against the AI automation and anything. At Quantly, we started building out cognitive mapping in 2018-19 to have automation, or actually, let me put it this way, AI and machine learning to predict social impact and environmental impact trends across continents. That's what we wanted to do. At this time, the AI, you know, kind of what we're seeing on a daily basis is, it's called a descriptive AI. Then there is predictive AI, then the prescriptive AI, which is the ultimate evolution, essentially, you know, having your own, consultant in your pocket, if you will. And at that point, all of us will be probably obsolete, you know, but we're not there yet. We're going to look farther into that. So AI definitely is going to play a role, just like Bob mentioned, you know, writing the acknowledgement letters, but also at the same time, AI kind of advising your organization, hey, these are some of the best practices you can adopt to do X, Y, and Z. Right. So that's the first thing. What we see in the fundraising landscape is that they're moving away. the tendency to have standalone CRMs and ERP fundraising solutions, that is kind of going away. There is a, the future is essentially integrated and simplified approach, not just, you know, I'm not going to mention those names. You already know which CRMs and ERPs I'm talking about. But if they are not connected to the non-financial data, if you will, then they're not serving the purpose. So there, I see a lot of discussion around how do I connect my CRM to my non-financial data? How do I connect that impact or social return on investment with the fundraising dollars? So that impact framework conversation. And the last thing that I see more and more often, and then I talk with organizations, grant makers, social enterprises, and so on and so forth. I see that the pure grant making is moving away, is going away, and turning into something that looks like impact investment, because a lot of younger generation, they want to donate, they want to contribute, but they want to do it from the lens of impact investing. So they want to see actual financial and non-financial returns of their investment, not just, hey, here is some money, go do good things. That is a big paradigm shift in terms of where things are going than all the tools and, you know, technologies that we have available.
Wonderful. Thanks, Cyrus. All right. And with that, we have reached the end of our panel. And I want to give a big thank you to our panelists for sharing their insights today. And I hope you enjoyed yourself and learned something that will benefit the work that you do on a daily basis. All right. That is it for me. It has been a pleasure speaking with you all. Thank you once again and have a nice rest of the day, everyone.
We hope you enjoyed this panel on fundraising in the digital age, tools and trends for success. If you enjoyed our show, please take a moment to leave us a review. You can find us on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Don't forget to subscribe for more great content. And if you're a fan of video, check us out on YouTube. Until next time, happy fundraising.